This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
All right, so you're going to have to, what we call in Yiddish, halkup. You know what halkup means in Yiddish? When you learn Gemara, you got to focus, because tonight's first half, it's a little bit complicated. You know I usually come in, I tell you stories about Bloomingdale's and all the other nice little things, but once in a while, we got to learn some Torah. So, I mean, everything is Torah, but there's like an amazing, amazing chidah this week that I would like to learn regarding Chayisara. And I think we're going to find it very interesting. So first of all, the parsha begins with the death of Sarah. The big question is, many of us learn in school. Well, that's already a big compliment. Many of us learn in school. I wasn't one of them. But many of us do learn in school that Sarah Imenu died when she actually saw the Akedas Yitzchak. It says the Satan opened up like a... He showed her the Harabayas, he showed her the Akedah. When she saw Yitzchak on the Akedah, so Picha Nishmasa, says Rashi. Her Neshama flew out. Picha Nishmasa means it flew out. Umesa, and she died. Her Neshama flew out and she died, or she died and her Neshama flew out. What happens first? So we all learn it as she saw her only son being killed. Wow, she couldn't handle it. Is that Sari Menu? Does that make sense to anyone in this room? Sari Menu was greater than Avram Avinu. If Avram Avinu was ready to do Akedas Yitzchak, you think if Sari Menu saw that Yitzchak was being shechted, she would die because of that? Just the opposite. She would say, Baruch Hashem, my son is being brought as a carbon. So I think that understanding is very misleading, that we think that she was in pain, that she saw her son dying, that's why she died. So there's many... Mepharshim that I've seen, the Chidah is something new that I saw for this week's Ashir. And some Mepharshim say just the opposite. She saw that Yitzchak didn't die. She saw that Yitzchak got off the Mizbeach. She, when she saw that, she thought that they failed. That Avram and Yitzchak failed the Akedah. When she saw that they failed the Akedah, she felt so bad. This was going to protect Klal Yisrael forever. And now they failed the Akedah. That's what killed her. Not that she saw that he was going to kill him, but just the opposite. She saw that he didn't kill him. That's a teretz that I saw a long time ago. But the Chidah says an amazing teretz, which is connected to a shir that we gave 2 weeks ago. But I want first to understand who Sarah was, right? Who Sarah was. So Baruch Hashem, this past Motzei Shabbos, I got to give a short little shir. One of our students here, she finished learning Shmiras HaLashon 3 times. So she probably, that's like, I mean, after you learn Shmiras HaLashon 3 times, can you say anything? I don't know if you can say anything. But she finished it 3 times, and we made like a little siyum. And Baruch Hashem, I had to prepare. Can't just get up in front of the roof and say anything you want. That doesn't work that way. So I had to prepare. So where did I look to prepare? So every Matzah Shabbos, I learn Chidah. So I figured, you know what, before I come, I'm going to learn Chidah. I'm going to prepare something to say. So I'd like to repeat something that I said in her house, to understand who was Sarah Imenu. So if you take the words, says the Chidah, if you take the words, Vayihiyu Chaye Sarah, right? It says, Vayihiyu Chaye Sarah, Meya Shana, Esrim Shana, Sheva Shanim, Rashi says, why does it say 100 years, 20 years, 70 years? It just say 127 years. Meya Esrim Sheva Shanim. Why does it say Meya Shanim, Esrim Shanim, Sheva Shanim? So Rashi says that when she was 100, she was like 20. When she was 20, she was like 7. A 7-year-old has no Averis. A girl's Averis start when she's 12, right? Now, in Bezen Shalmailu, you're not judged until you're 20. So, when she was 20, she was like a 7-year-old. When she was 100, she was like, before she was like just 20. So that she had no Averis Bidei Shemaim. So she was pure, clean. In fact, the Zohar says that Sarah Imenu would not have died. Would never have died because she had no Averis. If it wasn't from eating from the Eitz HaDaas. So that's who we're talking about. We have to understand. So you tell me she saw the Akedah and she got so, oh my goodness, look what's happening to my son that she died. Doesn't make sense. He says the following. He says, if you take the words, Vayihiyu Chaye Sarah Meya, and Sarah was 100, right, 20 and 7. If you take the last letters of the word Vayihiyu, is a Vav. Chaye is a Yud. Sarah is a Hey. Meya is a Hey. Gives you a Vav, a Yud, and 2 Heys, which is Hashem's name, Yud Ke, Vav Ke. The Seif Tevois, the last letters of Vayihiyu, Chaye, Sarah Meya, is Hashem's name. To teach us that the life of Sarah Imenu was always around the Shem Havaya, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. He says, if you go on further, and he says, if you take the words, Vayiyu, Chaye, Sara, Mea, so if you take the last letters of each word, you have Yudke, Vavke. If you take the first letter, let's take a look. Vayiyu is a Vav. Chaye is a Ches. Sara is a Shin. And Mea is a Mem, spells Mashuach. B'schus Sara Imenu, who her whole life was connected to the Yudke Vavke, Yavoi HaMashiach, Mashiach will come. Ad kan Devarav. So, this is what he says. He says that Sara Imenu was on the level, that she was on the level of bringing Mashiach. She was on the level, she lived her whole life, which we're going to talk about. And Baruch Hashem had the schus of listening to Rabbi Brody this week, who wrote The Garden of Emunah, actually translated The Garden of Emunah. He spoke in our seminary, he spoke in our high school. And at the second half of our shiur tonight, I'm going to repeat some of the most amazing things that he said. Maybe add a little bit, subtract a little bit, but he said mainly what he said, and they were absolutely amazing, and it has a lot to do with this week's parsha. Okay. He says the following, which I think is very interesting. He says that Avraham and Sarah were compared to the sun and to the moon. And we know that the moon, its whole power, is the reflection of the sun. Now, some of you might say, so the moon is nothing, right? First of all, if there was no moon at night, there'd be no reflection of the sun at night. You'd have no light from the moon at night. So when the sun's not here, the reflection is coming from the moon. So when the husband's not home, who brings the light into the house? The wife. So he says, it was very interesting, Rabbi Brody said, he said, how do you know that the moon has, from the reflection of the sun, sometimes has, we're not going to say more power, but we're going to say different power than the sun? He said that watermelons and cantaloupes, you cannot grow in a greenhouse. You cannot use ultraviolet light because melons grow by moonlight. And if you want to ask your biology teachers or whatever, wherever you have to ask, it's a fact that melons don't grow from the sun, they grow from the moon. So if you take melons and you put them in a greenhouse and you give them fake sunlight, they will grow. They won't grow at all, zero. So the reflection, sometimes the reflection has a power to help things grow, but the sun doesn't help grow. So a woman, a wife, even though she might say, oh, here they go again, Jewish religion, we're nothing, just reflection, right? But the truth is that we see here that the reflection has its own power. What controls the tides of the ocean? Not the sun, the moon. Low tide, high tide is controlled totally by the moon. So the moon, even though it's just a reflection of the sun, has its own kaiches, has its own strength when it does this reflection. So that really came from, it's an interesting thought, the woman was cursed, because originally she was equal to the man. But when she gave to Adam to eat from the Eitz Hadas, so one of the curses that she got is that she's going to have to serve her husband. That was one of the two curses. What was the second curse? The second curse was that she's going to be the one that's going to give birth, and she's going to have to go through labor and whatever else it takes to give birth. They're very connected, and I'll tell you how. Says the Chiddah the following. That Avraham and Sarah were equal. They were equal. We know that Sarah might have even been bigger than Avraham. If the male and the female are equal, you can't have children. You cannot have children. They cannot be equal. This is the Zohar said, this is what the Chiddah brings down. So he said that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to do, he did two things. By the Bris Ben Absarim, he promised Avraham Avinu that he's going to have children. How is he going to have children if Sarah Imenu is equal to him? Because two equals can't have children. So two kings can't have a kingdom. It has to be one. So Hashem went ahead and he added a hey to Avram's name. And he made it from Avram to Avraham. What did he do to Sarah? He took Sarah's yud, which is worth 10. Yud is worth 10 in Gematria. And he gave her a hey. So he upped Avram 5 and he lowered Sarah 5. So now they could have children. What happened? How did Hashem make up for it? He gave him a child. What's the child's name? Yitzchak. He gave her back, because Yitzchak, we're going to see soon, was connected very much to Sarah Imenu. So he gave her back the Yud. The Yud from Yitzchak, she had a child called named Yitzchak. He gave Sarah back the 10, right? Because now she didn't need to have any more children. So he brought it back to the same level as Avraham Avinu. And then they were able to have children. So why am I telling you this? So the Chidah says that a person's neshama and a person's guf are also a team, and they have to produce, right? What does the neshama produce? A physical body produces a child, a physical child. The neshama produces Torah and mitzvahs, emotional tzchusim, things in the spiritual world. So, if the guf, a person's body, and his soul are equal, then they can't produce anything. They can't produce anything. One of them has to serve the other. If the guf serves the neshama, then from the neshama can come a spiritual child. If the neshama serves the guf, then from the guf can't come a spiritual child. So he says, the Chidah says, that a person has to work on himself to make sure that his guf is not, that his neshama is not subservient to his guf. And a person in this world, in the world that we live today, we're so into the body, and the body, and the body, that we forget about the soul. And if the body is in control of the soul, not only you're not going to produce anything, mitzvahs, Torah, mitzvahs, but you're going to end up destroying everything. This is what the Chidah says. The reason I'm telling you this Chidah, because it's very connected to the main point that I'm going to get to in my shir. Okay. So he says the following. And this is a little hard to understand. I'm not going to really get into it because we spoke about it a few weeks ago. We know that Yitzchak was born with a female neshama. Okay, now, we're not going to get into what that means. The Chidah says, in the name of the Zoya, that in Sefer Gulgulim it brings down that Sarah Imenu was the Gilgul of Chava. And I'm going to prove that to you tonight. And Avraham Avinu was the Gilgul of Adam. Sarah Imenu and Yitzchak Avinu, when he was born, shared the same female neshama of Chava. And therefore, when they shechted Yitzchak on the Akedah, and we learned 2 weeks ago that when they shechted him, they cut one of his pipes, and his neshama flew out. Whose neshama flew out? His neshama was Chava's neshama, because he was, right, he was part of Sari Imenu, which was Chava's nukva neshama, was Chava's female neshama, and that flew out. Automatically, when he lost that half of the neshama, the other half of the neshama that was in Sari Imenu left Sari Imenu. That's why Rashi uses the word, not that she died and her neshama left, pacha nishmasa. When Yitzchak's neshama, which was part of Chava, left, so the other part of Chava that was in Sarah also left. Okay, cool. Why are you telling us this? What happens? If you look in the Akedah, it says that Avraham Avinu went and he took an ayol, he took a ram, right? He took a ram instead of Yitzchak, which is very hard to understand. Because what's the big deal? What's the test of taking a ram? Right? Why is the Torah telling us it? What does it say here? Vayelech Avraham, vayikach es ha'ayil, he took the ram, vayaleil lo'ayla tachas beno. And he took this ram and he brought it up for an oyla instead of his son. And is any of us in this room impressed? The whole thing of the Akedat Yitzchak was that he was bringing up one of his own children. He was willing to shecht one of his own children for Hashem. So now Hashem said, don't shecht your child. So what did he bring up instead of his child? A ram? Big deal. Who cares? What kind of sacrifice is that? He shechted rams every day for food. So if he would have said, instead of his son, he brought Ishmael up. He shechted Eliezer. He shechted Sarah. That he went ahead and now he said, oh, you know what? I passed the test. Now I'm going to show Hashem my feelings for him. I'm going to give him an ayil. And it says in the Torah, Tachas Benoi, instead of his son. So the Chida says that in this aisle, that in this aisle was the soul that left Yitzchak when he was shechted, that neshama of Chava went into the aisle. How do we know that? Because it says, Vayavoy, he brought, right, where's the pasuk? He brought an aisle, right, where does it say Vayavoy? Okay. So in this week's parasha, I'm sorry, in Chayesara, it says like this. It says that she died, right? And it says, "Vatamas Sarah b'kiyas arba he chevron ve'etz kenan vayavo Avraham lispoit l'sara vayavo he came." What do you mean he came? What is it telling us? Vayavo, because Avraham Avinu knew that the minute he shechted Yitzchak, and his neshama left him, he knew that Sarah died. Where did this neshama go? It went into the aisle. So he said, now Chava's neshama is in the aisle. How am I going to be misakin it? The only way to be misakin it is to shech the aisle. So that's why the Torah says, Tachas Benoi. He brought the aisle instead of his son. His son, he was being misakin, Chava's neshama. Now the neshama left and went to the aisle. So Tachas Benoi, the neshama that went from his son into the aisle, that's who he had to shech. How do you know this? If you take the words Vayavoi, that Avraham came, Lispoid Lissara, to say a eulogy on Sarah, Vayavoi stands for Rosh HaTevis, V'nishmas Yitzchak, the Toich aisle. And the neshama of Yitzchak was inside the aisle. Shahakol Shairish Echad, it was all one Shairish. Okay, very nice. Rabbi Wallerstein, why are you telling us all this? Right? We don't have to learn Kabbalah. We don't need to know. Gilgul Chava, right? What's going on over here? Because to understand this parasha, you have to understand what happened here. So now, they look for a Shidduch. We know from the Rav Chaim Vital. Rav Chaim Vital says that neshama now that was shechted, that was in the aisle, where did it go? Where did the neshama of Chava go? The neshama of Chava went into Rivka. How do we know that? Because it says that Rivka was born at the moment of the Akedas Yitzchak. Rivka was born when Yitzchak came to the field after 3 years being in Gan Eden. He met Rivka. This is this week's parasha. Right? And he was coming from the Sada, which was Gan Eden. And it says, how old was Rivka? She was 3 years old. Which means that now Rivka had whose neshama? Chava's. She had Chava's neshama. Okay. So now she had Chava's neshama, and she has to be misakein Chava's neshama. Okay, so now let's see what happens. Now, it also says that all the avos, thank you very much. For the day, we'll have a good drink soon. So it says that all the avos had to be misakin Adam Zavera, and all the imois had to be misakin Chava. So that means that Yitzchak, who is now Yitzchak, had whose neshama? He got a male neshama. So that's why he was able to have children with Rivka. Whose male neshama did he get? He had Adam's neshama. So once again, if you learn the Nistarim, the secrets of the Torah, Adam and Chava were back once again. In what way? Rivka was Chava, and Yitzchak was Adam. But we know that Yitzchak, right, once upon a time, before he lost the neshama of Chava, he was part of Sarah. Sarah had half the neshama, he had the other half the neshama. Now let's take a look at the psukim in this week's parasha.
It comes full circle. Another
oh, does it come? Wait till you see how it comes full circle. Amazing, 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 amazing. If you learn the Torah, you see amazing things. Listen carefully. Vayikach ha'eved es Rivka vayelech. V'yitzchak ba'mi be'asheva v'hu yeshe be'eretz. V'yetze Yitzchak l'suach basada. Yitzchak comes out of Gan Eden. She sees Yitzchak. I mean, girls, I know, you know, falling for a guy is one thing, but she fell off the camel. Right? She saw Yitzchak. I mean, this is Torah. This is not a romantic story, right? She sees Yitzchak. What's she falling off the camel for? right? So she fell off the camel because when she saw, she had the neshama of Chava, when she saw Yitzchak, she saw Adam. And Chava realized that she's back with Adam, and now is her chance to fix the whole Avera of the Eitz Hadas. And let me show you how she fixed it. So then it says, a very interesting pasuk, Vayivieha Yitzchak ha'oyala, Sara imai. And Yitzchak brought her to the oil of Sarah, his mother. That's a little weird. Why would he bring Rivka to his mother's tent? He didn't live in his mother's tent. He brought it to the tent of Sarah. Vayikach es Rivka vati lo l'isha, Vayaheveha, and he married her, and he loved her. Vayinachem Yitzchak acharei imai. And after marrying Rivka, he had Menachem. He wasn't upset anymore. He was consoled. Why was he consoled? Because once again, his mother had the neshama of Chava. He lost that. Now, he married Rivka, and Rivka has that neshama back. So Vayinachem, he wasn't missing his mother anymore. He now had a woman in his life that had the same neshama of Chava that he and his mother shared originally before the Akedah. That was a nechama. Okay, very nice. Now, let's go to next week's parasha. Pasha's told us, unbelievable. What was her Avera? What was Chava's Avera? Chava's Avera was that she came to Adam and she gave him, it says, the Gemara says they were grapes, but she didn't give them grapes because he would have known that the grapes were from the Eitz Hadas. So she brought him wine. And he didn't know what wine was. It was a drink. He didn't know that the wine was from the grapes of the Eitz Hadas that were squeezed. And he drank the wine. That's what she did. And she gave very bad Eitzah. She gave him advice to drink from the wine from the Eitz Hadas. So now, what did she bring to the world? What did she bring to her husband? Klala. She brought Klala to the world. So now she said, I have to be misaking that. And through trickery, the same trickery that I used on my husband to get him to do the big Aveira when he was Adam and I was Chava to eat from the Eitz Hadas, I'm now going to be misaking trickery with the same thing that I got him into trouble is the same way I'm going to get him out of trouble. With trickery, I'm going to end up having him give the bracha to Yaakov Avinu, who was the opposite of the Nachash. Esav zeh Nachash, Esav zeh Amalek, Esav was the Nachash. She said, I'm going to steal away from the Nachash what he stole away from me. He stole away from me the bracha and gave me the klala. I'm now going to do the same thing to the Nachash using his same tactics. I'm going to be more Urim than the Nachash was Urim. And if you look in the Psukim, it's amazing. Because when Yitzchak asked Esav to get him matamim, he told him to go hunting. Say hasadeh, go into the field, but suddenly tzayid, and find me, hunt me down some meat, some venison, and bring me like lamb, bring me deer meat. Go hunt and bring me meat. That's all he asked for. He didn't ask for bread or cake or wine or soda or anything. He told him, go out and bring me meat. What happens when Rivka, who's now Chava, sends Yaakov, who is the Yetzer Tov, to Yitzchak, who cannot see? She has to be misakein that all those years in the beginning of creation, she gave him wine from the Eitz Hadas. So she had to be misakein the wine that brought the klala, she has to make it into wine that brings the bracha. So if you look in the pasuk, Yitzchak asked Yaakov to bring him meat. What does she send? Vayomer higashli. He says, come close to me. Yitzchak says, v'achol mitznei b'ni l'man tibrach anach. Vayigashloi. And Yaakov came close to Yitzchak. Vayoychal. And he ate. He brought him the meat. Vayavayloi. And his mother sent him to bring his father yayin, wine. Vayesht. And he drank. He never asked Esav to bring wine. He just asked Esav to bring meat. And all of a sudden, the Torah says that Rivka, who is now Chava, sent with Yaakov meat, but also wine, because she wanted him to give a bracha on the wine, because she caused a klala from the wine. And Shitaka was misakin it. And what does, and this is the final word from Reb Chaim Vital on this, what happens when Yaakov said to his mother, to Rivka, he said, if my father finds out about this trickery, he's going to curse me. And Rivka said to Yaakov, Olai kilascha bini. I'm already have the curse on me. I'm Chava. I've already been cursed. The curse is on me. You have nothing to worry about. This whole story that's happening here is a tikkun for me. So she answered him, don't worry about getting cursed. I'm the one who's cursed. I'm Chava. I'm the one who got the curses. And therefore, kach shmak b'koyli b'leich kachli, and take this for me. B'leich kachli. What do you mean? What is Rivka telling Yaakov in this pasuk? Take it for me. It wasn't for her. It was for Yaakov to get the bracha. No, she said, the curse is on me because of what I did as Chava. Go do this. You don't got nothing to worry about. This has nothing to do with you. It has to do with me. Kachli, do this, Yaakov, for me, because I need a tikkun. And this was Taka, the tikkun for Chava. This whole story of the stealing of the Bechaira. You think, stealing the Bechaira. It's all about the tikkun for what Chava did originally in the beginning of the world to be Mesakein. What happened? And it's all in the psukim of the Torah. Why am I telling you this? Chida, Reb Chaim Vital. Every person that's here is here for a reason. We're here to be mesakein what we did last time wrong. Whatever it is. How do you know what you did wrong last time? The thing that you have the biggest problem with. This time, if it's sneers, that's what you did wrong last time. If it's that you can't give money away, that's what you did last time. If you're a mechutzavdik, that's what you did. Whatever you have the hardest struggle with, whatever that is, that's what you did last time. You can't have any respect for your parents, because last time you didn't have respect for your parents. And that's your tikkun, and that's why you're here. And if you don't fix it, you're going to come back again. And it may be worse the next time. It usually is. So I'm just trying to show you from the Torah that Chava, look what happened. Neshama came back in Sarah and in Yitzchak, and then it came out of both of them, and then it went into an aisle, and the aisle got shechted, and it went into Rivka, and then Rivka had to go and trick Yitzchak to give a bracha to Yaakov, and all this whole story of the Torah, which you would never know if you didn't know the Nisr of the Torah, was all to give her a chance, even though she did a terrible Aveira in the beginning of the world, to give her a chance. So from this you see that every person, after 120 years, when you come up to the next world, you're going to know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you many chances in your life. You have to do all kinds of stuff to give you a chance to be mesaken while you're here. A person has to be in touch with themselves and has to understand what their biggest struggle is, and that's why you're here. Girls tell me, I'm struggling with my tznius. Yeah, some girls don't struggle at all with tznius. They're more modern, they're less religious, they have no problem with tznius. Because the last time, that was their problem. Or kibbut aveim, or shalom bayis, or whatever it is that you're struggling, the thing that you have the hardest time with, that's really why you're here. That's what you're here to be misaking. And while you're here, being misaking that, you have a whole life and a potential to do so many more mitzvahs, to do so much more, to grow so much. It's not only don't come down for that thing. You're here already. If you're here, it's like walking into a safe and they tell you can take everything. And you're like, no, I'm just after a diamond brooch. And you walk in there, and you take the diamond brooch and all the gold and silver are laying, then you walk out. Sugar, no. You're there already anyway. Fill up your pockets. What are you doing? So yes, everyone's here to be in the sock in something, but the mitzvahs are laying all over the place. They're all over the place. So grab them. You have a mitzvah, kibbut of aim? Grab it. You have parents? Grab it. Don't wait till you chatshalom, you don't have parents, and you can't do kibbut of aim. You got to go to the grave once a year and talk to a stone. That's what you're waiting for. While they're alive, and you can feel them, and you can hug them, and you can kiss them, and you can talk to them, and you can call them for Shabbos, that's when you got to do kibbut aveim. When they're in the ground already, it's very hard to do kibbut aveim when they're in the ground. So what is everybody waiting for? You have parents? Rabbi Gamliel always tells me, Rabbi Gamliel lost his mother when he's very young. He says, my father has to live forever. So I have to do kibbut aveim. I need him. He said, I lost my mother. I lost half my mitzvah. Yeah, that's how he looked at it. We looked at, oh, I lost my mother. Oh, it's a tragedy. He looked at it, I lost a mitzvah. More than my mother, I lost a mitzvah. I can't call her for Shabbos. Yes, you could do mitzvahs and say her name, but who remembers? Who remembers? So we need to do this while we're alive, not to wait till we're not here. Anyway, I brought you all this whole chidah and this whole thing just to show you how much Hashem has to do sometimes in order to be mesaken and neshama, but he's willing to do it. And if it wasn't for the akedah that we learned, there would have been no Yitzchak, would have never had children because he was in the neshama denukva. So the whole thing was written, looks like a regular parasha. The whole thing was written to get to this point that she could fix the wine, she could give the wine, get a bracha, and fix everything that she did. So in our lives, because Baruch Hu does this all the time, he gives us chances to fix. You have to jump on it. Okay. I'd like to talk a little bit about, and this is on this subject matter, on the connection between a person and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this is what Rabbi Brody spoke about, and he said some very, very fascinating things. There's one subject I'd really like to spend a couple, I know it's very late, we started late, but I'd like to just spend a couple of minutes on this subject. He said the following. He says, when a person's thirsty, right, so your mouth gets dry, your tongue gets dry, your mouth gets dry, right? The water that you drink, what needs the water? Your mouth? Does your mouth need the water? No. Mouth doesn't need the water. Your body needs the water. Right? Now, your mouth gets dry. Hashem created a mechanism, a trigger, when your body needs water, so your mouth gets dry to tell your brain and the rest of you that I need water. If your mouth would not get dry, and you would not know that you need water, you would just drop dead in the middle of the street. Because you don't know that you need water, you didn't drink water, right? And we know many people, you go into the hot sun in Israel sometimes, right? And all of a sudden you dehydrate and you faint. What's going on, right? It's because you didn't have enough time for the triggers to tell you that you need water. So if a person didn't have triggers that their mouth gets thirsty, you wouldn't know that you need water. So Hashem knew that people are not, especially me, right? I definitely wouldn't do this. People are not going to stop like a horse, right? Every hour and get a water break. It's just not going to happen. Oh, I'll do it later. Also, I'll be dead. For 2 days, he said, I'll do it later. I'll be dead. So Hashem created us that you have to get thirsty. And you get more thirsty, and you get more thirsty, and you have to take a drink. So he also created us the same way with food. So the person would never eat if he didn't feel in his stomach that he's hungry. Your stomach is not hungry. Your stomach, the organ of, that's a little teeny organ. Your toes need the nutrients, your brain needs the nutrients, your liver needs the nutrients, your fingers need the nutrients. Every part of your body needs the nutrients, not just your stomach. So why doesn't your brain get hungry? Why doesn't your kidney get hungry? Why doesn't your toe get hungry? Right? Why isn't your toe hungry? My toe's hungry. Right? So because Hashem created one aver in your body, one limb in your body, to tell the rest of the body needs food. The body needs food. And that's why Hashem created hunger and thirst. It's just a symptom to the actual need. So Rabbi Brody asked, how does a person know when your soul is hungry? A person's physical body, so you have symptoms. And the symptoms are, my mouth is dry, I'm thirsty. My stomach's growling, I'm hungry. So those are physical signs for a physical body. But what's the signs for a soul that's hungry? For a soul who hasn't connected to God in a very long time. And the answer that he said is a very scary word. And the word is, anyone know?
Depression.
It says when a person is depressed, when a person feels low and depressed, it is the symptom. Is the emotional symptom. You can't have a physical symptom for an emotional problem. So when your emotional gas tank is running out of gas, your stomach's not going to get hungry. And your mouth is not going to get thirsty. You're going to get depressed. You're going to get down. You're going to get down on yourself. You're going to get agita. You're going to get anxiety. When you get anxiety and when you get depressed, that's the emotional hunger of the soul. A person who's close to Hashem and his soul is not hungry, you will never find depressed. Rav Moshe Feinstein was never depressed. He was very close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You walked in, you lit up. They have a warmth. Where does that warmth come from? Why aren't they depressed? Gedolim and Tzadikim. Why aren't they depressed? And the answer is, they're not depressed because they're feeding their souls. Depression is an emotion. If the soul is full, then there's no reason for the symptom to say that it's hungry. Right after you finish a steak dinner, your stomach's not growling. So he said, it's very interesting because it's so true. I've been saying it in a different way for a very long time. So he said, so what do we do? So you're depressed. So what do? You pop a pill. He says, but the pill is physical. So you're popping a pill to fix an emotion that's a problem with your soul. So you're feeding the emotion something that's physical. You can't fix an emotional deficit, hunger, with something that's physical. So if someone comes up to me and says, Rabbi Wallerstein, I am very thirsty. And I say to them, I'm going to take care of your thirst in a second. How? I'm going to give you an hour shear. You know, look at me, can I get a drink of water? No, I'm going to give you the most emotional share I ever gave in my life. An hour share, it's going to be happiness and love, and I'm going to get your emotions flying. And guess what? You're going to be dying of thirst. It's not going to help you. You're going to tell me, Rabbi Wallerstein, I'm starving, I haven't eaten in 2 days. We want to break our fast. It's Matzah Tisha B'Av, it's 8 o'clock. I'm like, no, I'm giving you a share for another 3 hours. Guess what? My words, you're going to eat my words. And you're all going to be full. You're going to be sitting here one at a time, sneaking out the back. I can't feed you physical food with my words. But the other way around, you can't feed an emotional deficit, a hunger, an emotion. You can't feed that with material things. This is so on target, it is scary. So a person is depressed, so they go ahead and they go shopping. Right? And they go shopping, and for that moment that they're shopping, they feel better, and then they're back into their depression. A person is depressed, me, right? When I get depressed, what do? I eat. Everything. Anything, especially chocolate. Right? So it's great. You feel good about the chocolate, but did you solve your problems? Did you help your emotional problems? No. Now you have more emotional problems because you look in the mirror and you're like, uh-oh. Right? So It just makes it worse. So he said, our generation, the problem with our generation is that we're being misdiagnosed. The whole generation is being misdiagnosed. We're being diagnosed that we're not happy because we don't have things. And the reason we're not happy is because we're emotionally starving and our soul is screaming out in depression, and it's giving us this symptom. And I don't feel well. I want to sleep in my bed all day. I don't want to get up. There's no reason for me to live. All that is not something that you can fix with a pill or a drug or drinking or a good movie or a good cry or a good book. It's not going to fix it, because the soul's happiness is connection to God. And if you're disconnected from God, then your soul cannot be happy. And sooner or later, that pill is going to wear off. That pill doesn't fill you up. That pill just makes you feel that you're not hungry, but it doesn't fill you up. Drugs and all the things that we do to make ourselves happy, they don't fix the soul. They just make you, sometimes we call it, it's like a diversion. So it's like if someone wants to pull your tooth from the old days, so the doctor would make some jokes before he gives the kid a needle, so the kid doesn't feel the needle. He does feel the needle, but by the time he feels the needle, it's over because he made the kid laugh. But the needle still hurt. It's called diversion. So there's many diversions that we have, but the bottom line is we always come back and we're still depressed because we didn't connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are so misdiagnosed. We are so misdiagnosed in this generation that we're so busy with all kinds of physical things to fix our emotional problems, our emotional disconnection with Hashem. It can't. It's like you're coming to me and telling me you're thirsty and I'm giving you salty pretzels. I'm just making you more thirsty. When you come to me and someone's depressed and I give them pills or a good movie or a good laugh or whatever it is, I'm not helping the neshama. The neshama is screaming, I'm depressed because I have no connection to Hashem. I don't talk to him. I don't see him. I have nothing to do with him. So what are you giving that person? That person's smoking up a joint? So how is that going to help his neshama? It's not going to help his neshama. It's just going to make him not feel. But when he feels later, the infection, the pain is even more. So he gives a very beautiful mashal. And he gives a marshal with an airplane. And he says, and I'll end with this story. He says, an airplane was flying from New York to California. And the pilot and the co-pilot are having a great time. They're sitting in the cockpit. They're having a ball. They're enjoying themselves. Everything's great. They put it on automatic. They're 3 hours into the flight. These guys are the biggest party guys, this pilot and co-pilot. They don't have to do anything. Everything's on automatic. All of a sudden, there's a little red light flashing in the corner. Oh, my goodness. It's the left engine. The left engine is losing oil. It's losing power. It's losing everything. So the co-pilot tells the pilot, oh, my goodness, we got to land in Chicago, over Chicago. We got to land right now. We're going to lose the whole plane. We got 500 people on the plane. We got to land the plane. He says, what's bothering you? What do you mean what's bothering me? Don't you see the red light flashing on the starboard? He says, no problem. Watch this. Pulls off the red cover, pops out the bulb, puts back the cover, says, no more problem. And, of course, this plane's going to crash. What's the question? The plane's going to crash. What did you do? You didn't fix the engine. You just popped out the bulb. So Laser Brody says, the same thing with us. We're in pain. We're going through depression. We're going through a hard time. Instead of landing and fixing what's bothering us, that we're disconnected from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're busy popping out the bulb and saying, okay, now there's no problem because I don't feel the pain anymore because I took this and I took that and I took that. Meanwhile, all you did was pop out the problem and you're going to crash. In the end, you're going to crash. So he says you have to go out and you have to connect HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And how do you connect HaKadosh Baruch Hu? By having emunah. And how do you have emunah? By talking to God. You have to talk to God. So the person has to talk to God. And everybody in this room has and the ability to talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to sit on your bed tonight, to go out tomorrow morning, and to talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, some people in here are going to tell me, and some of the girls, after they heard the speech, said, it's a very nice speech that he has emunah. Do you know how many times I spoke to God? He never answers me. Right? Many of us feel that way. I needed a shidduch. I cried. I went to the kaiso. I sat on my bed all night. I cried. My grandmother was sick. She died. The shidduch never happened. You know, it's very nice to get up and give a whole speech, the light bulbs, the plane, all this baloney, you know, it's baloney. Because I cry to Hashem and nothing happens. So I answered this girl. I jumped in. So he said a very cute story. He said he gets all these letters and these emails because of his book. So he said that there was a girl in South Dakota that read his book. And she writes this story to him. She says, so I didn't believe anything you wrote. So I went out into the field and I said, God, Rabbi Brody wrote that you can talk to God, and he answers. So now I'm talking to you. Show me a sign that you really love me. So he said that in South Dakota, there's a gopher called the Star-Spangled Gopher. It's a little gopher, a little animal, and it has stripes and like stars on its back, and it comes out of its hole, and it's very nasty. It doesn't get along with humans at all. He says, he said, I'll show you the email. She writes, you're not going to believe this, Rabbi. So there I am standing to God and saying, show me a sign. This little Star-Spangled Gopher comes out of the hole, looks at me, she goes, Rabbi, I swear, he smiled at me. So he had the email. And then he went back into the hole. But I said something else to the girls. I said, you know, hide and go seek, I played it as a kid. Some kids, when they play hide and go seek, sometimes I play with my grandchildren, so I'm like, let's go, you know, somebody, one of the kids are hiding, let's go find them. And I know the kid's in the bathroom, and I know he's behind the shower curtain. And the kids all run into the bathroom. No, he's not here. They run into the bedroom. No, he's not here. They're running all over the place. No, he's not here. And I tell my grandchild, I said, he is in the bathroom. I'm telling you where he is. He's in the bathroom. Kid runs back into the bathroom, looks at the toilet, under the toilet, in the tissue box, all over the place, runs back out. He's not there, Zaidi. I'm like, he's in the bathroom. Zaidi, he's not there. I'm like, you didn't look everywhere. Goes back in 3-4 times till finally I have to say, shower curtain. What, Zaidi? What'd you say? Shower curtain. And then, of course, he moves the shower curtain and he finds him. Now, how come he didn't find him all those times? Because it depends how you look. So the girls were saying, some of the girls were feeling very much, and some of the people in this room, no matter what story I'm going to tell you about Emunah and Hashem, you're going to say to me, it's very nice, Rabbi Wallerstein, great stories, you have a lot of good stories, but the bottom line is, been there, done that, I don't see God. I don't see Him. Sorry, I call on Him, I ask for Him, I talk to Him, He never answers me back. My answer to you is, you're not looking hard enough. Oh, every rabbi says that. Every rabbi says you're not looking hard enough. You guys always have an answer. I don't know. I go into a flower store, I see God. I go into a fruit store, I see God. I don't need to see a gopher in the middle of a field. If I'm looking for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I see God in everything. If you don't see Him, means you didn't look at the rainbow, you didn't look at the clouds, you didn't get out in the morning and see the sunrise. He's all over the place. You're just playing hide and go seek like the father's looking for the afikoman. He just wants the bench already. So he goes and he runs around and goes, I can't find it. You didn't really look for the afikoman. If you really look for the afikoman, you'll find it. And when you find the afikoman, you get a prize. A person who really looks for God finds him. And that's the greatest prize of all. The problem is that we don't look for him. We make believe we look for him. We don't really look for him. He is so close to you, you wouldn't believe it. You want me to tell you how close God is to you? I'll tell you how close God is to you. Every single person in this room, Baruch Hashem, has a heart. And every person in this room has a heartbeat. Your heartbeat beats 60 times per minute. Good sports athlete, 60 times per minute. If you times that by 60 for an hour, and you times that, right, by 24 for a day, and you times that by 30 days for a month, times 12 for a year, times 30 years, you do the math on your calculator tonight, you will find that when you are 30 years old, your heart, Baruch Hashem, has beat 1 billion times. Do the math. One, not a million, 1 billion heartbeats by the time you're 30 years old. Average life of a human will say 70. That's 2 billion point something heartbeats in an average lifetime. No electricity, no gas, no oil, no battery, no going in every 100,000 beats for an oil change. You should be healthy because you don't need anything. 2 billion heartbeats on its own without any switch, on, off switch. There's no switch. There's no electricity. Nothing. You're looking for Hashem? 2 billion heartbeats. He's right here. Now, Rav Laser said, I don't know. I never did it. If you listen to your heartbeat with a stethoscope, you'll hear Yud K, Vav K. Yud K, Vav K. That's what he said. I never did that. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. You don't even have to go outside into my flower store to find Hashem. Just in your own body and the way you say Ashiyotza and the way your body works. He's there. You can find him everywhere. And he answers. So I want to tell you a little secret which he did with the girls, which I think was amazing because I did it with him. And we're not going to do it here. I don't want you to start getting emotional. And he did the following. You can do this. You go home tonight. He said, imagine you have a Zaidi, a grandfather, right? Some of you had a grandfather, some of you never had a grandfather. I had a grandfather. A Zaidi never sees anything wrong in his grandchildren. A Zaidi is the safest place. After we used to get beat by our parents, where'd you run? You ran to your Bobby and your Zaidi. Bobby and Zaidi was candy on the table, a hug and a kiss, and on their lap, you could tell them all your secrets. Safe place. The safest place in the world is a Bobby and a Zaidi. So he said, you have to look at a Kadosh Baruch Hu like a Bobby and a Zaidi. You have to close your eyes. I did this, it's amazing. You have to close your eyes when you get home and sitting on your bed. You have to imagine that you're sitting in your Zaidi's lap, Hashem is your Zaidi, and that he's giving you a big fat hug, and you're spilling out all the stuff that you're going through to him. And there's nothing that you could tell him, whatever you did or whatever you did, there's nothing you could tell your grandfather that he won't make an excuse for you. You could say, Zaidi, I can't believe I killed 10 kids today. Nah, you didn't really kill them. They killed themselves. You haven't been there. Right? A Zaidi will never find anything wrong with his children, his grandchildren. He says, close your eyes, go into Hashem's hands, and just let it go. Amazing. He says, and you'll hear an answer. Amazing. It's true. We're just so busy with our cell phones and everything else that we're so busy with that we can never go to a certain time where we just put ourselves in our Zaidi's hands. So I want to give everyone a bracha taka that we should be able to quench our emotional thirst with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with Emunah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Emunah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu means that you believe that Hashem is there. He's everywhere, and that you are extremely important. One of the girls asked a fantastic question. She said, what does Hashem care
if I have a miserable life, or if I don't keep Shabbos, or if I don't keep anything. He has so many other daughters. Fair question. He has a million daughters. What does Hashem care? So Rav Nachman, who he's the breast of a chassid, so we know in Kabbalah that the whole Klal Yisrael is one body. And our body of Klal Yisrael, Neshamas, is connected with part of Hashem. So he said, if you take a person's finger and you cut it off, and it's on the floor, and the guy's screaming, you're like, what are you screaming for? You have another nine. You have nine more fingers. What's the problem? You say, you're right, I had nine fingers, but I had 10. And now I don't have 10, and I'm missing one, and it hurts like crazy. There's something you should never know, girls, in your lives. But I've heard of it, I've read about it. Someone who has an amputation, who has a limb cut away from their body, there's a pain called the phantom pain, which means that never someone in the army got his hand blown off, he doesn't have a hand, and he's screaming in pain that my right hand is killing me and he doesn't have a right hand. The reason that that is such a scary pain is that you can't heal it because there's no hand to heal. It's called a phantom pain. You could look, and it exists. In fact, I have phantom, what I call phantom phone vibrations on Shabbos, right? Because my phone, many times I'm giving a shir, it's on vibrate. I don't want to disturb anybody. So on Shabbos, I'm sitting in the middle of davening and I feel in my pocket, my phone's vibrating and I'm panicking. Oh my goodness, I put my phone in my pocket. There's nothing there, right? So there's a phantom phone vibration. I'm sure some of you have it too. That you feel like something's vibrating in your jacket. It's not there because you're so used to it. So that's something, a phantom pain you can't fix because the limb is not there to fix. Says Rav Nachman that every Jewish girl and every Jewish boy is a limb of God, is a nitzitz of God, is a limb of God. If that limb gets cut off, it doesn't matter how many other limbs God has, that limb is cut off. And if that limb is really cut off, then the pain that Hashem has is a phantom pain, because that person's not there anymore. There are certain averes in the Torah that it says, Yechayev Kares. Kares means cut off. The soul is cut off. The limb is cut off. Yes, you can bring that limb back by doing tshuva. But if you don't do tshuva, that limb is cut off. He says, the pain that Hashem has when he loses one of his daughters, and she's not even there to fix anymore, she's so far away that she's not even there to be fixed. He says, that's a pain that Hashem can't console. I saw this in Parshas Truma in the Zohar. The Zohar describes this. And Hashem says, anyone who brings me back that girl or that boy, that limb, from the dark king, will sit next to me and the Shekhinah in the other world and will get the key to go wherever they want. It's the lashon of what it says in Parshas Truma on a person that brings another person back to the body. Because one of my daughters, when she was very small, so her finger got cut off in between two doors. We were on a Shabbos. We took the finger, we put it in a cup of water. We called that Salah, they took us to Bellevue. Within an hour and a half, they did microsurgery. They put it back on. You never know ever today that anything happened. They got it back in time. Microsurgery. Tshuva is microsurgery. Tshuva is bringing that limb back to Hashem and sewing it back on. And then if there's pain, put a cast on, put a splint on, put a Band-Aid on, you can fix it. But if the person is totally cut off and they have no connection to Yiddishkeit anymore, then that's chas v'shalom, a phantom pain. So don't think, anyone in this room, that when you disconnect yourself from Hashem, he doesn't care, because, come on, he's got a million other girls. You could have 10 fingers, if you lose one, it's the biggest tragedy in the world. You could have 10 toes, if you lose one, it's the biggest tragedy in the world. So I know it's very late, and I know I always say I'm going to end, but if I don't say this story to you, you're missing a big chunk. So he said, he ended up, Rabbi Lazer Brody, he said this story, I was on the floor. He said that, I said the whole Dvar Torah here to show you how Hashem works with tikkunim, gilgulim, ayil, this whole thing, how to make someone come back. He said the following story. He said, this is Rabbi Feldman, I think, in Cleveland, whatever, and he teaches in a college, not a religion, a Goyisha college. And he decided to give a class on Emunah. 25 half Jews, half not Jews. I don't even know who was in the class. So this rabbi gets up in this college out in I don't know where, and he says, who in my class ever heard of the word Emunah? These kids never even heard of Hashem. They never heard of anything. One kid raises his hand and he says, Emuna, total belief in God. The rabbi standing there is like, oh my goodness, we have a religious kid in the class, but he's not. He says, did you go to yeshiva? He goes, no. Are your parents religious? He goes, no. He says, how did you ever hear the word Emuna? He says, Rabbi, you're not going to believe what I'm going to tell you. Rabbi says, get up in front of the class and tell us how you ever heard of the word of Emuna. He says, I'm a Jew, and two of my friends in this class are Jews. We don't know nothing about nothing. My grandmother bought me a little charm, a Magen David. That's all I know about Judaism, is I wear a Magen David. He says, one night, me and my two Jewish friends went to Alabama, to a bar. We're going to go get ourselves a bunch of beers. So as we sit down in Alabama, in this bar, I'm wearing my Magen David, and this girl, waiter, right, barmaid, comes over and says, yo, can I get you boys a drink? I say, yeah, get us three beers. She goes, hey, man, you're wearing a Magen David. You must be Jewish. He goes, yup. She goes, well, check this out, man. She puts out her hand, and there's a tattoo on her hand, E-M-U-N-A. The guy goes, what's that? She goes, that's Emuna. She goes, you're not going to believe how I got this tattoo. She says, tell me, how'd you get this tattoo? She says, well, she says, I was going out with this boy, and he was a big lawyer from a big law firm. Man, that boy was rich. He drove himself a big car. He was rich, and we was in love. We was going to get married. I was going to have a big house on the top of a hill with a big fat car. I was going to have a Mercedes. I was going to have a mink. I was going to have diamonds all over. That boy was my man. He just upped himself and walked out of my life. She said, I was broken. My heart was broken. I was depressed. Life was over for me. She goes, the owner of this bar, he's a Jewish man. He said, whatever her name was, Colette, I don't know what her name was, but Eileen. She said, Eileen, you look depressed. She goes, yeah, my man, he just upped and left me, man. He said, you look very depressed, Eileen. I just read a book. I just got a book from one of my friends. It's called The Garden of Emuna from some rabbi. It's a true story. Said, Eileen, you read this book, you're never going to be depressed ever. She said, boys, I took that book. I read it from one end to the other. Good book. I didn't believe one word that rabbi said. She said, 2 weeks later, I get a phone call from my girlfriend. She says, Eileen. She goes, what? She goes, you read about your boyfriend in the newspaper? She goes, my boyfriend was in the newspaper? She says, yeah. They just caught him. 12 kilos of cocaine. That boy was no lawyer. That boy was a drug dealer, man. He was just doing drugs. He ain't no lawyer. He needs a lawyer. She turned around. She said, I looked up at heaven. I said, God, that book that man wrote, that's right. You always watching us all the time. I thought that was a lawyer. That was a drug dealer. I would have been dead the rest of my life. I would have been in jail. God, whatever that rabbi wrote is true. I have Emuna. She said, I upped myself. I went to the tattoo king down here. I said, you put a tattoo on my arm, you write E-M-U-N-A, Emuna. You see how far HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to go to get three Jewish boys who are going to get a beer in Alabama to get connected to this book. Of course, when he heard about the book, he got the book, and that changed his whole life. Hashem never gives up on his children, ever, ever, ever. For Chava, he had to go through everything he went through, that Chava could be masaken, what she did. For these three boys drinking a beer, he had to have this girl go through everything that she went through in order to bring them back. Kadosh Baruch Hu was always there. Sometimes he plays hide and seek. Just got to look for him. If you look for him, he'll show himself. You'll find him. Sometimes the shower curtain will move a little bit, and you realize that there's something behind that shower curtain that you want to find. You just have to look. We're so busy on our computers and our cell phones and our TVs and our DVDs and the news and everything we're so wrapped up in that we don't get a chance to even look for him. Don't ever say that I've called on him and he didn't answer. I've called on him and then I've turned around. I just want fast, like putting it in the, you know, God, now, front, center, where are you? Doesn't work that way. It's not kosher delight. It's not steak sandwich in 2 minutes. It's not popcorn. You know, when I was growing up, you know what it took to make popcorn? Oh my goodness, a frying pan with oil, with Vancomycin, the stuff was popping all over the kitchen. You had to pick it up and put it back in. Now, pop it in, 2 minutes, microwave, with butter, without butter, extra salt, little salt, just pop it in. You guys don't even know what it means to look for something. You don't even know what it means to look for something. Everything is brought to you. You don't have to look for something. But there's one thing out there that's just worth the work. And that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's Emunah. And if you look for him, something will show up smiling. It may not be a gopher, but it'll be something. Shabbat Shalom and bracha and a good week.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.